Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here comes the unfiltered truth about money, investing, and retirement planning from a man who will give it to you straight. No bias and no spin. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome back. Thanks for putting up with that compliance thing I got to do. But you know, there's things in there that you need to know when you listen to somebody talk about financial stuff on the radio. So there you have it. Okay, so info@davidholland.com. That's how you can send me a question. And I am very willing and interested in answering your questions because it makes for good radio, to be honest with you. I like answering your questions. It's fun for me. So here are some questions I've gotten recently, and I would love to answer them for you. So here they are. I'll give you the question, and I'll answer it. All right. I read your article about diversifying stock and found it interesting. What kind of stock do you recommend nowadays? The top picks without breaking the bank. I have a retirement plan and stock where I work. I'd like more information from an expert. And that's from Steve in Daytona. Well, thank you, Steve, for the characterization of me as an expert. I read a thing the other day. There's a thing out there in the pop culture called the 10,000-hour requirement. Have you heard of that, Lisa? Lisa's giving me, no, not yet. All right. It's called the 10,000-hour requirement, and it's been brought to the surface by Malcolm Gladwell, an author that I think is actually pretty sharp. But he talked about it, and to be an expert, according to this measure, is you got to have 10,000 hours in your whatever that is you focus on. So that's the math, if you want to think about it. But your question, Steve, is a good one. Okay, so what stocks to get into? Well, okay, everybody got their pen. I'm going to give you all the winners for the next 10 years. Ready? No, I'm not going to do that. You know that's not coming. You know what I'm going to say, right? Steve, the answer is my top picks will always be, and this is going to be a little boring, but I think it's important, and it works, by the way. My top picks are always going to be diversified portfolios. Okay, I'm not a big fan of betting on any one company. Now, you read the reports in the paper, magazine, internet, television, and there's a stock that's growing. They have made an acquisition or they've done something else, and maybe they stand to do well going forward. That's fine. That might not be a bad pick, but I would make that part of a diversified portfolio. You know, when I build a portfolio, Steve, what I do is I like no load funds, no charge to get in, no charge to get out. I like low cost funds. That's a CPA in me liking that inexpensive cost containment. But I like to build it so that no one stock is going to disrupt the portfolio if it blows up. So when I build it, I test it at the end. I put my portfolio of funds together. I make sure I have adequate diversification, large cap, small cap, mid cap, different sectors of the economy, different regions of the world. I look at it from a global standpoint. How would the Martians look at investing on our planet? You know, where would we invest? Not just always U.S. centric. And I do all that, and then I do a final check. Do I have more than 1% or so in any one company, any one individual stock when I do that? And if the answer is yes, then I go back and I tweak and I adjust my percentages, because I think that the risk is much greater, or is the risk can be a lot worse than the benefit you get by trying to bet on the next Microsoft or IBM or Google or whoever. So yes, you can have individual stocks. No, I'm not going to give you my picks. However, all that said, I do have, with some of the investment portfolios, to be fair, I do have some individual stocks, and well, you'll just have to come in to get those, won't you? All right, Steve, that's your question, and there's my answer. Next question is from Chris, and Chris sent in an email question to info@davidholland.com. And so, Chris, your question was, could you tell me the difference between a mutual fund and an exchange-traded fund, an ETF? What makes some people say mutual funds are a thing of the past? Good question, Chris. Well, first I'll say people say all sorts of things. So be careful what you hear. Listen, but be careful what you hear. How's that? There are, the last time I checked, there are 26,000 mutual funds. I don't think they're going away anytime soon. I think the exchange-traded funds will be a natural addition. An exchange-traded fund is a closed-end fund. It basically is a pre-built portfolio of specific stocks. So you could have an exchange-traded fund that's going to track. It's like an index fund. It's going to track the S&P 500 or the Dow 30 or some other index. And so they buy all those stocks and put them in that fund, package it up, super glue the lid on it, and it's sealed, and that's the fund. And then it trades like a stock all day long. So one of the differences, of course, too, is it also is more liquid. You don't have to wait until the end of the day to place your trade. You can know what you're selling at, as opposed to putting your trade in on regular mutual funds and then have to wait until the market closes to see what you settle out at. Now, the other thing I like about ETFs, exchange-traded funds, is that if I'm going to do some index investing, they can be very economical. The cost can be low or lower. But they are, let me say this the right way, these funds are dumb. They don't think. There's not a manager. They just are that set stock. So there still needs to be management of the ETF, the exchange-traded fund, by its selection and how much you put in it. And that's, of course, you can do that yourself, or that's what an advisor does. We have both no-load funds and exchange-traded funds in our portfolios that we manage at my company. So I have both. I like to have that index to get my passive investing. I'm betting that the market is going to do better than the managers that are managing the funds, and I'm going to have the funds in there to give me some more diversification, a little different approach. I don't want to move in lockstep with the market, and I'm hoping that I'm going to get what we call alpha, which is the return that the manager produces. So usually a combination can be helpful, and the overall cost, you know, when you look at the cost of the average mutual fund, if I take all 26,000 funds and I push the average button, it weighs in at about 1.3, 1.4%. If I build a portfolio, which is how we do it in my office, if I build a portfolio of mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, I can get that cost down to about half. I can be at about 0.6%. And that's part of my job, managing a client's money, is to keep the cost low. So good question, Chris. A lot of people have questions about the different types of funds that we might want to use. Let's do this. I've got another question I want to get to, but I need to take a quick break. We'll do that. We'll come right back. Stay right there.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And welcome back. All right, I'm answering your questions, which are fun for me. So play along, please. info@davidholland.com. You can send me a question and I will be happy to answer it. Now, if it's super, super individualized, I will let you know that maybe we need to generalize it a little bit so it has applicability for a lot of people. Okay, so my next question, or your next question, comes from Sarah. And her question is, I understand that I can draw money from my 401k account without penalty since I am over 59, but I don't understand the taxing rate and how that works. Is the money taxed at the current bracket that I fall into at the time of the draw? Once I go on Social Security, will the tax rate be at that time? So there's some questions Sarah has about taxes related to 401ks. Here's how it works. The first part of your question, Sarah, you're exactly right. At 59 and a half, you can take money out of your IRA. You don't pay any penalties. If you take it out before then, unless you fall under a couple of the exemptions that are available, you pay a 10% tax on top of whatever your taxes are. So if somebody had, for example, $100,000 and said, I'm taking all $100,000 and I'm going to Vegas, well, you better win a lot, because you're going to have the $100,000 is going to be subject to the 10% tax, Plus, it's going to be subject to ordinary income tax, not capital gains, ordinary income tax, and that'll be on top of whatever other income you have. So let's say you have a salary of $50,000. The $100,000 is taxed at the brackets above 50. So bad, bad, bad. That's my my technical financial term for that. Bad, bad, bad. Don't do that. Okay, so Sarah knows not to do that. She's over 59.5. Now the question is, and I've already kind of gave you a sneak peek of the answer, when I take money out of my 401k, at what rate? Well, what you do when you make withdrawals from your 401k or any other qualified account, ready? 403b, 457, 401a, drop, the BenCore programs, tax-sheltered annuities, all that stuff that you've never paid tax on, it all comes out as ordinary income. So you take your current income, and then you, when you take more out of your 401k or whatever the account is, it's taxed at the next rate. So if you're in the 15% bracket, and then the amount you take out of your 401k goes into the next tax bracket, you're taxed at that next bracket. So it goes up. If you take enough out, it could be taxed at a very high rate. So, of course, you know what I'm going to say. Consult with a tax advisor. That's what the tax person is for. And when working with your financial advisor, when you make the withdrawal, you can also have taxes withheld. Now, the second part, and go ahead and have that money sent to the IRS. The second part is Social Security. All right, when you take Social Security, depending on whether you're single or married, single or joint filer, depending on that, and then how much your Social Security is and your other sources of income, okay, so some of your Social Security could be taxed. Up to 85% of Social Security can be taxed if you're over the thresholds, and the 401k withdrawal could push you over that threshold. So this is all very interrelated. The bottom line is going to be the more you take out of your 401k or IRA, these qualified accounts, the more that could affect putting you in a higher bracket, and the more it could affect making more of your Social Security taxable. You know, if you ever heard or seen somebody talk about either with a financial seminar or an advertisement saying, reduce taxation on your Social Security, you've heard that, right? They're referring to moving some of the income that you're earning, say with a bond or with a CD or something that earns interest, because that's taxed as ordinary income. They're talking about offering you a strategy that will move that money into something where that money's not going to be taxed currently, either tax deferred or tax sheltered, tax free income, in order to try to get you down below the amount, the threshold for taxation of Social Security. So that's what that's all about. But that's a very good question, Sarah, and I'm glad you asked it, because a lot of people run into this when they think about how much money they need to take out. And it doesn't take long. For 2013, a single taxpayer will pay 10% on the first $9,000. I'm going to round these numbers. The first $9,000, you'll pay 10%. And then as you go up on the next 27, you'll pay 15%. The next 51,000, you pay 25%. And then so on and so forth, all the way up to where you're paying 40% tax bracket, 39.6, on income over 400,000. Good problem to pay that tax rate, but you still are paying at a higher rate. As you go up the income level, you're going to have a higher tax bracket. Okay, so that's something to be aware of. Great questions. info@davidholland.com. Hopefully that's not hard to remember. Let's do this. Let's take another short break. I'll come back. I want to talk about friends, family, and your money. Stay right there.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply, or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
And welcome back. All right. I left you hanging there. Friends, family, and your money. You ready for a provocative statement? I've got one for you. Only hire somebody to manage your money who you also willing to fire. There it is. That's it. That's all I want to say about that. No. Okay. So here's the deal. If you're going to create a relationship with an advisor, and maybe you already have this, and because I've seen this, and I'm going to give you some examples of some real life situations kind of to make the point. But I was asked about this. I've been asked about this a couple of times by people. So I want to talk about this. If you've got a personal relationship with that person who's going to manage your money, you've got to be very careful. You need to really set some, you need to at least have a very clear conversation. And so I will share with you that I have developed friendships with my clients. I don't have them come in and I say, okay, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, you know, we're friendly, but I'm not, you know, we're not playing golf every week. I'm not, you know, over at their house for dinner and all of that. I work for them. Okay. And I care about my clients a lot. And I love being there for them to help them through different phases of their life. But I work for them. And I think it's just really critical. It's vital that if you're going to hire somebody, think very carefully about hiring a friend, because there have been a lot of problems that people got into. So let me give you some examples. You ready? Maggie, and I've changed the names to protect people's identities. Maggie invested in a multi-level marketing program, and with the hopes of building her assets for retirement, she recruited her friends by asking them to attend a luncheon at her house. Many of them signed up with the promoter of the multi-level marketing program. Maggie and her friends never saw any return on or of their money. After several years, Maggie's friends, some of them still won't talk to her. Okay, so, you know, mixing the two. Now, I say that. I have clients that refer their friends to me, and I'm very flattered with that. And I think that's a great thing. When those people come in to see me, they should be a skeptic, and they should ask me all the questions that they should ask. And if you don't know, How to Get Great Advice, Avoid Scams will help. That's the book. But you've got to be careful keeping these things separate. Example number two, ready? Back in 2004, okay, this goes back a little bit. But I remember it like it was yesterday. Back in 2004, a couple came in. They asked me to review their investments. The woman had just purchased a long-term annuity from her fiance's golf buddy. And once I looked at the annuity and the particular choice, I said, uh-uh. This, and they wanted me to look at it. I think they had suspicions themselves. I said, uh-uh. That was my professional assessment, right? Uh-uh. I said, we're not doing that. I don't think that's a good idea for you. And she was disabled. She might need the money. We talked through it. And I said, you know what? You need to ask for your money back, because they still had time to do that. And when they asked for it, the golf buddy was just, he was livid and was very upset. He begged and pestered them. And they finally, I said, look, they asked me what to do. I said, look, you got to stick to your guns. You can't do this. So, and I'll never forget this, that when it was all over, they got their money back. We were doing kind of a little debriefing about it. And I told them they should just put the money in. It was in something very liquid. And so that's what we did, or what they did. And so I remember, though, the fiance referring to the golf buddy saying, you know, that commission must have been really important to my golf buddy, more important than doing what was right for a friend. So I imagine that they weren't friends any longer. Here's another one. A retired couple came to me in 2007, and my firm started managing all of their money except for one account. And I know they weren't happy with that account, but they said they're not going to change it because their nephew was managing that account. And every now and then we talk about it, and they just were always frustrated. And so they had lost money on the account. They weren't happy with it, but they wouldn't fire their nephew. So they lost on both ends. They never talked to him, but they wouldn't bring themselves to fire him. Here's another one. And again, names are changed. I recently met with a couple that about to retire. They want to make some changes with their investments, and we're going to talk about what we can do. And they said, okay, you can make these changes, but not these accounts here. And I said, why? The sister's managing it. Okay. And they said, we're going to let you handle, David, we want you to handle this, the rest of these monies, but the sister, we're going to wait till she retires, then you can manage that money. So you see the conflict? It's all over when you have family get involved with your finances. And these are just a couple. I'll share more examples of this on another show, but these are the things. So here's the bottom line. I'm not saying you can't have working relationships with advisors, but just you have to have that ability to have that separation. When it comes to your money and finances, treat it like church and state. Keep them separated, okay? All right. That is all the time we have for today's program. Thank you for being with me.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.